if I'm Jalen Gilbo, even though the money isn't there at the nickel spot, I would go back to nickel.
Yeah, I think that's his place.
I think that's his place. I think, you know, which maybe that's the reason why Dwayne Nkina got the boot too at Pete Kwiatkowski, because they thought that move was a good move, which it wasn't.
I mean, it worked the year before with Jahdae Barron, and I think that's the interesting part. And we, I don't know if a lot of people remember this, but Dwayne Nkina, when he was here a million years ago, a lot of those guys would come in and start at safety or nickel type positions, and then move to the outside as they got more experience. And that was just kind of like a thing they did. And so, man, you cannot blame them for going to that well, I don't think. But I even questioned Jahdae Barron going to the outside. I was 100% wrong. But I was like, man, I just don't think that's going to work out the way everybody expects it to. And it did, and probably better than they expected it to. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, that was an incredible move. Kudos to him for knowing that. And he was the one that went to Sark and Pete Kwiatkowski and was like, hey, I want to try this because I think the NFL, they go really like me out here. And they made that move, a Thorpe Award win after you realize it was the right move. So, yeah, I also with the Jalen Gilbo thing, you saw Cade Phillips and Warren Roberson in the Cheez-It Bowl. And both of those guys, they flashed, man.
Phillips is a NFL like dream from a body perspective.
Right.
Like his legs are like 40 inches long and his arms are like 60 inches long. Like he just looks like a guy that is really hard to throw into because he's so long. Like it's hard to fit a ball in on a guy like that. And man, Roberson was just smacking people. Like it was like Roberson had a lot of penalty flag frustration from earlier in the season and was just lighting people up. That was cool to see.
We haven't
seen people like hit people that hard in a minute out of the secondary.
That's what I said. I thought his hit on old boy where you thought Roberson was seeing stars. I can't believe he came back in the game. Because they were trying to test him for a concussion. And he was out there still making plays, still hitting. But I think that was the hardest hit of 2025. Like, I can't think of a hit that made me jump out of my seat like that. Like, and that's what you want to do. That's what you want to show the new coach coming in, whose nickname is freaking Boom, Coach Boom. That's what you want to show. You want to show that Boom because
he
likes guys like that. Like, a lot of guys put up good tape for this next year. Like you mentioned, Roger Bo Barnes, clearly Ty Anthony Smith with the two interceptions. We just mentioned Cade Phillips and Warren Roberson. Wardell Mack, he had the best Pro Football Focus grade out of anybody on defense. Mm-hmm. Now, he only had 31 snaps, but he had an 89.2 Pro Football Focus grade in that game against Michigan. And 90s considered elite. 80 is good, 70 is above average. So if you at 89, you're right there on the borderline of elite. Yep. And in 31 snaps, he had that interception. He's a nickel guy, but coming into this year, this is going to be something this coaching staff is going to have to figure out. Is Grayson Littleton, just like we talked about with Jahdae Barron and Jalen Gilbo, is he good enough to go to that outside, which that's what he was playing in high school. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he's just a football player. I think he's one of those guys, it don't matter where you freaking put him. Safety, corner, nickel, he's going to be able to produce, especially with more reps and just, you know, getting his body right with more time and winter workouts with Torrey Becton. But with the way Wardell Mack looked, it's just one game. I don't want to get over my skis. Let me see you do it for a full 12, especially when you go to a 9-game SEC schedule and you still got Ohio State on it too. But is that something that Will Muschamp and this coaching staff look into for the 2026 season?
Yeah, that'll be one of the most interesting things I think about the offseason is how things may look different just based on Will Muschamp's completely almost opposite take on the way to play defense than Pete Kwiatkowski. We're not going to see a lot of 10-yard cushions out of Will Muschamp. Like he wants people up in people's faces. He wants people making it hard on quarterbacks to make throws. He'll take that. Oh, we got beat over the top. Oh, I'll take that PI. Because most of the time, like, we're going to make it hard for you to make completions. And obviously he's excited about defense. He likes people that can hit people. So yeah, there may be some guys that have sort of found a home in PK scheme that may not find a home as much with Will Muschamp. So yeah, I'm excited about that move. I know I haven't talked to you guys since then, but I was really excited to hear about that. Because man, I've just been worn out with PK, especially the last half of the season. Just watching us give up 10, 15 yard passes has made me pull what hair. I used to have hair before the season. All you guys dogging me about my hair. I had a full long ass head of hair. I pulled it all smooth out watching PK's defense. Shit.
That's hilarious, man. Yeah. Pete Kwiatkowski, I like him, but there were times where you're like, I don't know about that, but we'll get into that, Sean, because I want to hear more in depth into that. I want to hit some of these spots, you know, before we get into what we got going on in this second hour. He is Sean Redfern of the Horns Takes podcast, filling in for my man, Chip Brown, who just sent us a message on the TSU group chat. Hey, y'all, Twitter got hacked, trying to get it back. So all y'all wondering if Chip's out here selling cars or whatever the hell is going on, man, they got him. They got my guy, man. Tough. It's tough out here, but when you got all the followers that Chip has, it's bound to happen. It's bound to happen. He needs to probably got a real basic password too, like Eleanor 512, something stupid. So he gotta change that up, Chip. Change it up, baby.
let Google manage it for you.
Right? Right. I am Zay Collier, yo, Sean Redfern in the building. Transfer portal day underway January 2nd, which is also crazy because college football playoffs still going on. There's still bowl games today, but that's why we are calling college football the wild, wild west. Let's get into some of these mentions, though, like Covert BK, family owned and operated. Covert BK is the best. Been traveling all over this Christmas break and New Year's break, and our Buick Encore GX. We absolutely love it. And hey, you love Covert BK too. If you want to take my word for it, listen to these fine folks, Covert BK.
You see Covert everywhere. It's that personal level of just feeling like it's a personal family interaction.
The customer service, it's impeccable. It's unlike anything I've ever experienced buying a car.
Over the 30 years that I've been buying cars from them, I feel like I know them and they know me.
Covert's done an amazing job of making me feel valued. If you purchase a vehicle and you want to feel like you're part of a family, join the Covert family.
Come and experience it for yourself.
Covert, born and raised in Austin.
Nobody beats a Covert deal. Not now, not ever. So Bandit has an interesting take here. Derek Williams reportedly may be coming back under Muschamp. I haven't heard anything like that. I'd take that. I'd say why not? Like, yeah. If I'm Derek Williams, I'd listen, you know, bring it in.
They should all listen to everything that's at their disposal to listen to.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, you know, some guys just think, okay, I need something different, which that's understandable. But I always think that if you make a coaching change, be careful. Be careful just throwing yourself in the portal and not seeing what coach comes in, because that coach that comes in could change everything for you. Like, I remember Vernon Broughton talking about Kenny Baker when he came in. They were only together for 1 year, and Vernon Broughton was like, this guy completely changed my game, completely changed my approach, completely changed how I look at the game. Mm-hmm. And Vernon Broughton ended up getting drafted by the Saints the year later. So I be careful, you know what I'm saying? Because everybody was on my man Bo Davis, rightfully so. Bo Davis did a hell of a job. But just because Bo Davis did a good job doesn't mean somebody like Kenny Baker can't. And I think all these kids who put themselves in the portal when coaching changes happen. Be careful. Be careful, because if you're Ole Miss right now, which I think that's a beautiful segue to these college football playoff games that we saw these past few days. If you're Ole Miss, and hell, I'm talking about the coach too. If you're Charlie Weiss Jr., who is set to go to LSU, you're always going to be in Lane Kiffin's shadow. Whenever the offense does well, it's going to be Lane Kiffin getting the credit.
It was Lane Kiffin's offense. Yeah.
It's Lane Kiffin's offense. And even though you're dealing with Lane Kiffin's players at Ole Miss, Charlie Weiss is getting a lot of love right now. Charlie Weiss Jr. And the way that they're winning, I don't know if he thought that they would win against Georgia, but now that they have, which is, it's bogus that Lane Kiffin got $500,000 for
insane. Yeah, that's crazy to me.
That is nuts to me for sitting on his ass watching these guys play without him. But whatever, the rule's the rule. If I'm Charlie Weiss Jr., I'm thinking maybe staying in Oxford ain't that bad. Especially if I'm sure, like his father, he wants to be a head coach sometime.
Yeah.
I don't think he wants the Eric Bieniemy, Andy Reid effect, where Eric Bieniemy, everybody said he was such a good football offensive mind, yet he can't get a freaking job because Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes got all the credit. I'm sure he doesn't want to get typecasted like that. So wouldn't you, Sean, want to stay? And you could win at Ole Miss, clearly, and be the man to where it could springboard you faster into really being the man as a head coach whenever that opportunity comes. I don't know, but Trinidad Gamblis, that offense, it still looks good.
Yeah, they look amazing. And I honestly don't understand why Lane Kiffin wanted to leave. I don't. There is something fundamentally crazy to me about building something, which he did in Oxford, and then just walking away from it because you think things are going to be easier on you at LSU. I think that was a bad move for him. I think it's going to be a crash out party for all of them. I think in 2 or 3 years, he's going to be gone somewhere else. They're not going to have the success that they thought they were going to have. And that fan base is going to be losing their freaking minds and hate. I mean, like, it's amazing how Lane Kiffin just continues to manage to, like, add more people to his hate club. I don't know, man.
He makes it look easy, Sean.
I know.
He makes it look easy to hate.
He's the most hateable person in college football. There's no doubt about that. Like, that dude.
Yeah, I don't get it either. It's weird.
But to your point, yes, I think I bet you, if I'm Charlie Weiss Jr., my wheels are spinning. I'm willing to listen to about staying.
Yeah, I would stay.
Pete Golding, man, Weiss could probably be the head coach. I mean, probably would be like the de facto head coach. You know, I saw something the other day where Pete Golding was talking about how he didn't even really want to be the coach, but he needed to because they needed a coach. I was like,
yeah.
Like, so I don't think that experiment's going to last that long either, especially if your main guy on offense does head over to LSU. So who knows? Maybe Ole Miss is taking this opportunity to try to keep him around. And if I was him, I'd think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, Trinidad Chambliss. I mean, I don't know how many guys you're going to find like that because he's unbelievable. Like,
he's really good. There. Yeah, 100%.
He's out there playing sandlot football. He's accurate. Lacey's out there playing with one shoulder, but he's still a problem, even though he had a fumble yesterday. To be down 21-12 at half and to come back and just – they outgained Georgia like 473 to 343. Like, this is Kirby Smart, man. This is Glenn Schumann, which we mentioned Will Muschamp. Will Muschamp's not there right now.
Nope.
I feel like, again, Kirby gets a lot of credit, as he should. Glenn Schumann, not as much as Kirby, clearly, gets a lot of credit, as he should. Their next dude with their next set of eyes was Will Muschamp. He ain't there. So I'm big on that. I'm a coach's son. I know some of y'all are like, oh, Zay, that don't mean shit. And sometimes you're right. It doesn't. You're right. But there's something to be said, and I feel like I can make this example with Ohio State because Brian Hartline, who is now at USF, he was calling the plays all year. He called the plays against Indiana, looked like dog shit. Makes sense. Where's his mind at? If he's a good coach, his mind should be in South Florida because that's his program now. And it's not like the resources are great in South Florida. He's really going to have to grind if he wants to make that program successful. So Ryan Day takes over play calling against Miami. How'd that look?
Bad boy.
It didn't look good. And again, give Miami credit. I'm not saying that that's the only reason. Miami, they got dogs over there. Reuben Bain, that's a dog. Mesidor, that's a dog. Keontae Scott, who got the pick six, they got dogs at the U. So let's not like discredit them any. But what I'm saying is coaching matters, man. Consistency matters. That means something. So when guys up and leave midseason, the fact that Ole Miss is being able to do this without Lane Kiffin, I salute Pete Golden. I salute Jr., man. What those guys are doing is incredible. And
yeah, they're easily, to me, the most rootable team left in the playoff. Like, to me, like just to me. And I don't expect everybody to share that opinion, and that's fine. But, like, yeah, that probably most of it's because I don't like Lane Kiffin. I haven't liked Lane Kiffin for, like, 10, 15 years now. So
damn, that's a long time. What do you do?
Yeah, I just don't like it. He's just – you know what, man? Life to me boils down so much to just being a decent person. Like, it's not even – you don't even have to be a great person. Just be a decent person. And I feel like Lane Kiffin has given us every reason to just say, man, he's just not even just a decent person. To me, and like just some of the ways he handles things are just really wild to me. So it would make me, I would be ecstatic. I might go buy some Ole Miss shit if they win the national championship and be like, I was Ole Miss all along. If they can do that and just rub that shit in Lane Kiffin's face. Yeah, so
shout out to our TSU Ole Miss alum on here, Matt Gladson, who was very happy for that. Yeah. Today said he didn't see it coming in our group chat, but y'all check out Open Jam with Matt and Patrick coming up after us. I'm rooting for him. Like, again, back to Trinidad Chambliss, man. That guy, he avoids sacks. He's so hard to bring. He's running backwards. Like, this is stuff you don't teach nobody at the quarterback.
He looks a lot like Pat Mahomes at Texas Tech.
Yeah,
running around just slinging the ball. Those teams weren't really good, but Pat Mahomes was really good on those Texas Tech teams.
Right. And there's only so much you could defend as a secondary player when you got a quarterback that's keeping plays alive for over 5 seconds. Like, that's just, it's hard to deal with. And now you're just trying to, you know, mirror guys and they're freestyling their routes and you get Chambliss, he's pointing and shit. Like, it was impressive. Like, that was one of the more fun games that we saw over the last few days. And Gunnar Stockton, he did everything he could. Like, I love Gunnar Stockton.
I do too.
I love that guy. That guy.
He's like Sam Ellinger. He's like a Sam Ellinger type to me. Just like a hard nose, like, I don't give a shit. We're going to – and you know what? We haven't talked about it yet. Arch Manning is that too, but with a hell of a lot more talent.
For sure.
So kudos to Arch for that game. He got his ass kicked in that game, and he didn't give a damn. He was all about it.
Yeah. When it comes to the playoffs and when you're playing in bowl games like that, when you have 8 months to rest, I appreciated Arch Manning putting his body on the line like that. Now – he can't do that every game. He can't do that early in the season. That's playoff football right there. I expect that in the last game of the year, put it all on the line. Again, you have 8 months to get right, but you have to be smarter. If that's against Ohio State, I don't need you diving and, you know, allowing guys
to jump in and shit.
No, we don't need that. You know, you got a lot more games to play. Still run, but be smart about your running. And, yeah, Gunnar Stockton, they cut from the same cloth. Like, he took some hard hits, man. But
that one he took, the one everybody's talking about should have been targeting, and I don't know that it shouldn't have. Dude, I don't know how he got up.
That was
a hit.
Yeah, then they go to him on, like, the quarterback sneak, like, the next play. The next play, they go to him, quarterback sneak. He gets up. He's shaking the cobwebs off. Like, he's doing this and stuff. And I'm not going to lie. I thought he wasn't all there because he punched. He punched the shit out of Oscar Delp. Like, they got up, like, straight fist to helmet, just punched the shit out of Oscar Delp. And I was like, yo, dude's going to break his hand, but his tough ass, of course,
it's just play anyway.
It's a part of the game. Adrenaline, it's just part of the game, man. I like that dude. That was a hell of a game. Both teams deserve to win. And, you know, Kirby, the play of the game was that 3rd and 5. That 3rd and 5 play, Ole Miss ball. They're down, 3 at the time? And somehow Trinidad Chambliss throws a strike, or maybe it was tied. It was tied at the time, 3rd and 5. And they throw one-on-one matchup, explosive play down the field, and somehow stribbling, I don't know, 40-yard pass. Like, what? That's what you're calling? 3rd and 5, tie game. That's what we're doing. Like, that's why I'm like, Charlie Wise Jr., bro, you don't have to go everywhere with Lane. I know it's comfortable. And not maybe Charlie Wise Jr. doesn't want to be the offensive guy, like the main guy that when you lose games, they're going to blame you. Maybe he's not ready for that yet. But if he is, I'd look at Lane and be like, yo, Lane, I'm sorry, but
I'm staying home. I'd be trying to get as far away from that dude as I possibly could.
I know you would. I know you would, man. And that could be the case. That could be the case, too, because Trinidad James or Chambliss, he was doing some shit. He was doing some shit. So that could be the case, too. But also,
I mean, isn't that the case for every good play caller, though? I mean, you could be a genius. If you don't got the people to execute the plays, you're not going to look good.
Yeah, like going back to Andy Reid. Can Andy Reid done all that stuff
without Pat Mahomes?
Without Pat Mahomes.
I'm not sure exactly what that person was trying to say, like point wise. But if it was to say that Charlie Weiss isn't a good offensive mind, I don't necessarily think that's fair.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a tough standard. It's a tough standard to say you got to have sorry ass players and still go like score 40 points and win playoff games.
Yeah.
To be considered.
And this dude is still a D2 player first. Like,
kudos
to Lane Kiffin for firing this guy, but it's not like this guy had Arch Manning, you know, implications coming out. Like, he didn't have that aura around him. He was a D2 guy that was a backup. They had Austin Simmons starting the lefty. Austin Simmons gets hurt, and now Trinidad Chambliss is the man. So that's a great story. What Ole Miss has going on, I'm all for. It's a great story in sports. And I'm glad I'm not seeing all this chalk, man. Like, I'm good Ohio State losing. I'm good Georgia losing. You know, I'm good Alabama losing. Like, all that SEC loyalty stuff. Nah, Texas.
I have none of that.
I have none of that. None of that. Oh, Texas and the SEC. I need the SEC team to do well. I want Ole Miss to do well because of what Lane put them through. I could care less about them being an SEC team. I could care less about that. No, the way the SEC looks down on Texas, they don't want Texas to have any success. So, hell no, we ain't giving that shit back. Absolutely not. So I'm good with Georgia losing and Alabama getting their ass whooped. Just whooped, man. Like, I don't even know what to say about that. Like, and it's weird. It's weird, Sean, because the first 2 years of the 12-team college football playoff, in the second round, the teams with a bye are 1-7. The only team to win that had a bye was Indiana, and they rolled.
Yeah. I don't know if that's so much. People are trying to draw the distinction with having, you know, draw the correlation of having the bye to the loss. I think there's more problems with the way these teams get seeded than anything else. And it's probably, I'm not saying there's a better answer than having people sit in a room and talk about it and do the, what they're doing today, but it's flawed. You can't just go, oh, this team's undefeated. They're clearly the best team in college football. And you can't just go, oh, here's all the one loss teams. Let's lump them together. And I think this one's better than this one based on it's not a science, right? So a lot of it is just some of those teams aren't as good. The other thing I think, Zay, and all college sports fans are going to have to get used to, it's not like it used to be in the BCS era where you had to win. First of all, college football looks nothing like that. You got NIL, you got transfer portal. Second of all, like you had to win. You had to be undefeated to get in, basically. There's very few one-loss teams made it to the BCS National Championship. So it's just a completely different game. Today, with all the NIL and all that stuff, with so many people, with these rosters, you know, flipping as much as they do in the offseason, it might take a team a while to get better. We got to stop looking at it and going, oh, man. Like, and I'll just use Texas because it's the easiest one for me to take because it's the closest team I follow. They look like shit earlier in the season. But over the course of the season, especially the last half, they looked a lot better. And so, you know, it's tough to say, oh, this team, yeah, they got a couple losses, but they were in the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, and now look what they've done since then. I think if Texas doesn't take that score ass whooping from Georgia, a lot of things might have – I think they might have found a way to try to sneak them into the playoff. But once that happened, all she wrote. But the point is – teams are going to get better, and just because a team has won all their games or only lost one doesn't mean they're better than a team that's lost two games or lost three games. So I think it's probably a combination of things. The bye probably doesn't help because you just stop, and I think they don't play for – man, some of those teams didn't play for like almost 3 weeks, maybe even over 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's a long time, man.
I don't get the bye anyway. Like, let's start playing football. I don't know why we got to stretch the college football playoff out till February. It's crazy to me.
No, and the national championship game needs to be played before the transfer portal opens. That's insane. Yes. That's insane. What are we doing? Like, we know there's tampering going on before it opens.
Clearly.
But because these agents are calling around.
And, yeah.
But still, man, like, it's crazy what's going on right now. And I've been saying ever since 12-team playoff last year, winning your conference championship game, I don't think that benefits you any. It doesn't benefit nobody. Indiana's, they're the only ones. And again, that's kudos to what Kurt Cignetti and Fernando Mendoza are doing. But we've talked about it earlier. They got all of them grown ass men. They aren't playing with the pressure that blue bloods have to play. Like, they've never been here before. So there's still an underdog approach that, even though Indiana's undefeated, has the Heisman Trophy winner, won the Big Ten championship, there is still
They're still Indiana.
Kurt Cignetti could still call these guys, and they are underdogs. They all came from James Madison. They all were just afterthoughts. Like, Fernando Mendoza came from Cal. You hear how humble he is. Like, there's so many humble guys that are just blue collar. Let's bring the lunch pail in. Let's get our hard hats on, guys. There's no guys out here asking for like $5 million.
No,
there's just none of that. And if there are, they aren't taking those guys. And they're doing their due diligence when it comes to the evaluation process and the scouting process, doing it better than anybody. And they're being rewarded for it. So, yeah, man, it's hard to pinpoint why the byes are 1-7. I saw Dan Lanning vouching after the game that, yeah, I'm glad we won 23-0, but this game should have been played in Lubbock, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Which, all right, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's cool. I would like to see it at the homes of the teams in the first and second round. And then when you get to the Final Four, then you could have it at the bowl games and stuff. I'm good with that. But also, I don't know if that's the only reason why these bye teams aren't played. Like, that just, I don't know. That's just something to think about. But that gives us a good segue to Texas Tech and Oregon. I was shocked at that game. And Tech's defense, they were still good. It's not, you know, their fault that Baron Morton is getting the ball taken out of his hands when he's dropping back or throwing interceptions or Dickey is out here fumbling. Like, it seemed like every time Oregon scored, it was because they were in great field position.
Yeah, it was like 20.
The ball.
Yeah, like 20 of those points, 17 of those points came from turnovers for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, credit the Oregon defense, though. They played a hell of a game, too. But, yeah, I don't know. I wasn't that surprised. I think BYU is the worst 12-win team I've ever seen. And that was the only thing Texas Tech really had to hang their hats on all year long was beating them twice. So Texas Tech is still Texas Tech. They're spending money and they're starting to get to the point where they can start making some noise. For me, it'll be interesting to see if they actually can repeat and get back to the playoff again, because they're losing a ton. Like all those dudes you saw causing problems for Oregon's offense, almost all of those guys are gone.
Yeah. Bailey, Rodriguez, like all those guys.
A lot of them are juniors too. They're guys that they could move on, go into the draft and stuff like that. So, yeah, man, I don't know. I've never been super high on Baron Morton. I know they scored a lot of points this year, but if you watched them play, their defense was really the catalyst for that team and really set them up to score points the same way, you know, Oregon's was able to against Texas Tech the other day. So I didn't think it would quite be 23-0. But I did not expect Texas Tech to win that game.
Yeah, 23-0. That is rough. Like, you're talking about a team that put up 40 a game this year. And to what you're saying, like, the Big 12, was it really that weak? Clearly it was. Yeah,
I think so. I think it was. I saw the Big 12 play a few times this year, and I was just like, man, this is a joke. Like, they're just not. Man, and I people think I say that tongue in cheek. I'm serious. That BYU team is the slowest, most unathletic team. They got one dude that can run on that team.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. 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 If you're Tech, where do you go from here? Because I thought Tech had a legit chance to move on and play Indiana. And they definitely don't want to see Indiana with the way they're playing. But again, Dan Lanning, everything that he was calling defensively, even when the Red Raiders got down in the red zone, they just couldn't convert. And they were deflating
play. It comes down to bodies, man. College football is a sport where it's not necessarily just your starters either. Like, you saw how quickly – like, coming out of the second half or coming into the second half, Tech's defense, it started to give up chunk plays. It started to give up plays that they weren't giving up because those guys had played 49 snaps and they don't have another set of dudes behind that set of dudes that can come in and be even close to the same. And Oregon does. Depth will get you. And so, I mean, that's Nick Saban built a dynasty on depth. One dude could get hurt and another dude could come in and play just as well. That's why Nick Saban was so successful. Well, one of the reasons Nick Saban was so successful, but that essentially, like, from a personnel perspective, he was rolling out the same team on two strings of offense and defense, same guys, basically.
Yeah.
Tech doesn't have that. And it'll be interesting to see if they can get that. They're recruiting pretty well out of high school, and they're certainly willing to go out and spend money in the portal. We saw that, and I ain't hating on that. If you can do it, you should. I don't know why you wouldn't.
Yeah, they should have sole control over the Big 12 every year. with the way that
I think so. Money. Yeah, I mean, I think it's their league to probably lose every single year going
every single year for sure. Like, even though Kenny Dillingham took that pay raise, even though Kalani Sitake at BYU took that pay raise, both of them staying at Arizona State and BYU, there's no excuse for Texas Tech not to be in the Big 12 each and every year with what Cody Campbell's done and just the connection they have. And I get it. They got the same collective effort as everyone else, but we know that collective don't mean a damn thing. You can work it right to where it can still play into the advantages of the top dogs. And I think we're still seeing that, but it's still different. Some of these schools are still doing it a little bit different. Indiana, for example, and showing that it don't matter how much money you have, you still got to be able to play football. You still got to have the right guys with the right mindset. So Indiana, yeah, I don't even know what else to say about those guys. Like Fernando Mendoza threw 16 passes, Sean. 16 passes. I mean, that's your Heisman. 16. That's it.
They just kicked the shit out of it. I mean, just physically. I mean, if you didn't watch that game, you just saw the score, you'd say, man, like, what happened? You know, like, how did he get like that? And it was just that. They just physically manhandled Alabama. And, you know, a lot of people giving Kirk Herbstreit a bunch of shit for getting Alabama into the playoff and all that. And he certainly did talk him up after that SEC championship game loss. But even he was like, this is just really hard to understand. Like, how is this happening? How is this Alabama team getting physically beat like that? Yeah, and you got to give credit to Indiana. I wonder, though, like, how you see this with teams sometimes that get into this situation. Like, at what point, and it may not happen, I'm not saying it will, but there's a possibility that at some point they wake up and go, wait a second. Like, we've got all this pressure on us. And how will they handle that? I think will be very interesting. I think this next round game is an interesting one for them because they've already played Oregon.
Right. Yeah, it's hard, so hard to beat a team twice. Oregon's defense has gotten a lot better since that time that they played. So yeah. What's that gonna look like? As far as Alabama goes, I remember tweeting out that Texas is way better than Alabama when Alabama was beating up on OU in the first round of college football.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And just like, again, Texas ain't great. They're not great, but I think that Texas, before the transfer portal, Alabama before the transfer portal, if they would have faced off after the Iron Bowl and after the Lone Star Showdown, Texas would have beat the brakes off of Alabama. So
I agree. I think so.
I was good not playing Alabama in the college football playoff, but they want to make these conference championship games matter. And we know the SEC, how good it is. It's hard to say that the team who doesn't or who does make the college, the championship game, whether they win or lose, they have to be in because you got the teams like OU, A&M, and freaking Ole Miss waiting and. Yeah. So they have
that's the conference's fault for having 16 teams, ultimately, in my opinion. Like, to me, I don't think just because you get to a conference championship game, you should be in, even if that conference is the SEC.
Same.
Yeah, because you lost the game. You lost. I mean, the bottom line is you got there, and I don't think it's punishing you for getting there. Like, you should want to get to the conference championship game. You did. You lost. If you're a three-loss team at that point, you probably don't need to be in the playoff.
Right. Yeah. Cause why is Texas out, but Alabama's in, even though that Florida State loss that Alabama had was way worse. Texas lost against Florida. And you're like, oh man, Zay, that's a subjective thing to say. Really? Go look at their head to head Florida versus Florida State.
Who won Florida that beat game? Their ass.
Yeah. Beat their ass. So that right there should have shown you everything. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, screw the conferences. Screw that, because they lost to Georgia, too. And that got them their third loss, just like Texas. So just because Texas didn't play in that game, don't get me started. The whole committee, they just mucked up. They mucked up the whole thing.
Bad.
I appreciate how it turned out. They got lucky. Now, we know that they wanted Ohio State, Georgia, you know, Alabama. We know they wanted them in because when it comes to viewership, those schools, they pay attention. SEC schools, Ohio State, their viewership, we understand that. But I appreciate it not being as chalky as it is. Like the Miami game, what they did. Come on. Like that, I respect what they did. Cause I think Texas is still better than Miami, which is crazy to say. But look at what Texas did to A&M compared to what Miami did to A&M. Give me that Ohio State team with Brian Hartline already as the head coach of USF. Let me play that. Let me play the Ohio State team that I saw at Jerry World instead of Arch's first showing. With all that pressure that we got in the first game of the year. Give me that. Because I think Texas beats that Ohio State team too.
I agree.
Even though they already lost to them in the season. Like where Texas was at the end and where Ohio State was at the end. Give me Texas. I'm sorry.
The same team. They never got any better.
Right.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, Jeremiah Smith, he did his thing. But besides that, Julian Sand, they were getting to him. Ruben Bang, those guys could play. Like that defense, Mario Cristobal. Everybody's been hating on Mario Cristobal because he's had some bad game management moments in the past. Yo, his dudes are fighting. His dudes are fighting with crazy ass Michael Irvin on the sideline. Do you see that? Ain't no way he's sober. I love that guy. He's my favorite Cowboy of all time by far. Like I love Emmett. Aikman's cool. Give me Moose Johnson. Give me Darren Woodson. Nobody's ever going to top Michael Irvin because I know how that fool was acting off the field. And for him to be that wild and insane off the field and be that good on the field.
Yeah.
Like I love players like that, man. I wouldn't let Michael Irvin babysit my kids, but hey, in his prime, I'm putting them on my team any day of the week. I love that dude.
Yeah, it's wild. And to your point, I think what's happened in this playoffs has been the best case scenario for the committee because the viewership for this next round of games is going to be through the roof because of who's not in it. And then again, like what Indiana did to Alabama, like people are going to watch that game just to watch Indiana because they probably haven't done it. Oh, I got to see this. They beat Alabama that bad. We got to tune into that. And Ole Miss and Miami is a freaking like a dream of a matchup really to me. Can the SEC, can they get right in the playoff against somebody that ain't from the SEC?
Right.
And then can Miami continue just being as physical? I mean, I think there will be a physical team, but can they out physical somebody for really the third week or third game in a row in the playoffs? It's going to be fun. To me, it went from probably I'm not going to watch this shit as closely as I would to, and I'm definitely watching this now. Like I want to see how this works out.
Yeah, I'm locked in too. And you know, Miami, Trinidad Chambliss, this is a different type of quarterback because Julian Sand, you don't got to worry about his legs. Marcel Reed, you do have to worry about his legs. His arm, not as much. And plus the way the wind was kicking in that game at College Station, Miami versus A&M. Miami, they weren't worried about the pass at all. Neither was A&M. So now playing against someone like Trinidad Chambliss, who will be able to make Ruben Bain and make Messidor really work. Like, because when you get to them, all right, that's the first part. Can you get them down? Because Georgia has some dogs and they struggle getting Trinidad Chambliss down. He's running backwards. He's doing all this and that. Like, he's shifty. He's real shifty. So, yeah, I'm ready for that game. And then the rematch Big Ten between Indiana and Oregon. I don't know how that's going to go. Like
I don't. And that's why I want to watch it. Yeah. I mean, to me, that's why I want to watch it.
Yeah, I have no idea. So, again, this is what we want. Solid Final Four teams. All the chalk is out. And, yeah, we'll see what happens. I knew someone was going to say this. Once I brought up Michael Irvin, someone's going to ask the impression. Hey, come on, baby. The you, damn it. We're just the best of the land. What are we talking about? Mario Cristobal, what are we talking about, baby?
That's pretty good.
It's all right. It's not bad.
If you close your eyes, you can picture it.
I've had worse. I've done way worse in my day. The playmaker one, that one's something special to me. Yeah, let's go back to him because Chess, somehow, I guess on YouTube, they have like a Michael Irvin cast where they just had the camera on him.
Oh, really?
He was mic'd up. Oh, wow. My God. Some of the funniest shit you're ever going to see. He grabbed their like all world right tackle that dude that's going to be in the first round. I don't know his name, but Miami, their right tackle is like probably the best in the nation. There was one play after they scored where Michael Irvin grabs him. He like grabs his helmet and the dude's like 6'7" or something like that. Playmaker's not small, but he has to look up to grab him. And he's like, big fella, you blocking like a motherfucker, big fella. You blocking like a motherfucker. It's just like, dude.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out, too.
Yo, Mario Cristobal, kudos to you for allowing the OGs and the alums to come back and be a big part of what you got going on, because certain guys don't do that. Like, I used to hear Charlie Strong wasn't the best at that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I always heard that, or like, you know, Shaka Smart, his time at Texas basketball wasn't the most inviting back, which I always think that's a big no-no. If you go a to a mistake. Program, yeah. huge mistake, you got to embrace everything at the program you're at. And if that means the alums, bring them on. Bring them back as much as possible. Have them on the field. They had Michael Irvin and Ray Lewis on the field. Both of those guys served time. So? Right. So?
They won a lot of games, too.
They won a lot of games, too. It don't matter what they did. It don't matter what they did. Hey, they won a lot of games. I want them on my sideline because they bring extra juice, man. They bring extra juice. And even though they're crazy as hell, hey, what they're saying, they've been there and done that. Like, Michael Irvin, as crazy as he is, his advice, I'm still going to listen.
Yeah.
I'm still going to listen. He might be spitting and slobbering and talking crazy, but that dude talks, I'm going to listen. And Mario Cristobal, yeah, Jimmy Johnson on the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, big part of Mario Cristobal's career is Jimmy J. Jimmy J was tearing up on the sideline and stuff. Like, it's cool. It's cool because I love old school Miami. I love those 30 for 30s that they dropped years ago, part one and two. Like, I just love their culture. Uncle Luke, Two Live Crew. Like, it's just fun. It's fun. Like, the Felons versus the Catholics, that one, Notre Dame, Miami rivalry. Like, I like Miami winning. It's fun seeing Miami win again. But, yeah, like, Mario Cristobal – you got to give the flowers where they're due, man. He's done a hell of a job, and a lot of people wanted him out a couple of years ago, and now they're a couple of games away from winning the national championship. Got to salute that dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not as emphatically excited about Miami being good as you are, Zay, but I think it's cool for those fans, the few of them that there actually are. It's cool for their school because – I mean, if you talk to Miami people, they seem to only remember like the 80s and 90s, early 2000s when they were awesome. They don't remember how terrible they used to be before that. But that's like what I grew up. That's like when I grew up, that was like Miami. They were good, real good. I don't want them to be good because I want to take players out of Florida and bring them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, but I get it. But it is cool. It is cool that we're getting to see, you know, Miami be decent again.
Yeah, that's true. See, I didn't think about it that way. See, that's why I appreciate you, Sean, because now
all my reasons are selfish.
Yeah. Now, as a Texas fan, you're right, because that crop in South Florida, Lord, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's – I don't understand it. Like, I don't get how just that, like, Fort Lauderdale and Miami and North Hollywood, like, I don't understand just how that area of Florida, South Florida, can just produce so many stars, man. So many big-time players. And it starts early. Like, it's a lot like Texas that way. It starts at, like, the Pop Warner level. Because I remember there was a star show, like, on the – like HBO, like there was like a star show called like Liberty City Pee Wee or something like that. Something kind of like Friday Night Tykes, if y'all remember that show where they went back and showcased the Texas Pop Warner culture, which was amazing. I missed that show. That show was awesome. But they had a version. And like these kids, they were all from tough areas. But when it came to football, oh man, they treated it like it was the pros. Mm-hmm. And that's just the culture. Like, that's what they know. They are born into it like that. And Jeremiah Smith, he said it himself. Like, yo, if Miami was popping like this when I was in high school, I wouldn't be at Ohio State. That fool said that. And you should have seen the way those Miami players were dapping up Jeremiah Smith after the game. Because he went off. And he has a lot of respect. Like, he was dapping up coaching staff. Like, I'm sure, you know, Jeremiah Smith ain't going nowhere, but if he would, Miami.
That'd probably be where.
That'd probably be where he'd go. So just, that culture, you're right, man. Like, if you get guys out of there, which I'm sure Steve Sarkisian is going to continue to do, you're in a good spot because they love them some football down there in South Florida.
Sure do.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the right call. We got a few minutes left, so going to talk a little basketball because Texas men's basketball starts up conference play tomorrow, 5 o'clock, going up against Mississippi State. And Mississippi State, they're all right. You know, they've had a couple of losses this year. They're starting to play some good basketball as of late. They beat a decent Utah team in Salt Lake City. They played at a neutral site, even though it was in Utah. So it was basically a home game. They played at the Jazz Arena, but they won that game. They were down double digits, came back, won. They beat Memphis, Penny Hardaway's team, a couple of weeks ago. So as of late, they've played some good basketball. They got a couple of guards to pay attention to. Josh Herbert, definitely pay attention to him. 6 foot, which I don't think he's 6 foot, probably about 5'10", but he plays a lot bigger than his size. He's averaging 21 points a game. He's insanely quick. Coach Jans, Chris Jans, who's known for his defensive philosophy, he lets him take any shot he wants. Any shot he wants. So when you got the green light like that and you're averaging 21, if you're Sean Miller, you better know where 12 is at all times. I don't know who they're going to put on them. I think that's a Tremont Mark matchup, a Kendall Weaver matchup. I do not want Jordan Pope guarding Josh Herbert. I think that'd be a really tough matchup, but he's going to have to guard somebody, and most likely that's going to be Jaden Epps, 6'2 guard, 16 points a game. So Mississippi State, they are very guard heavy. If you could slow those guards down, you got a good chance of winning, but this Texas basketball team, they've just been so up and down this year, especially when they play other Power Five opponents. Now that you're starting conference play, you got to make better decisions if you're Sean Miller when it comes to this roster. You know, I think sometimes I see guys on the floor where I'm like, why is he playing right now? You know, Nick Cody's one of those players, and I'm just like, I don't know if he could help. And I see Declan DeRue coming off the bench, barely playing. I've been talking about it all year, that power forward position. It's been a struggle. And in last game, they put Dalen Swain at the power forward spot. Offensively, it worked out. Defensively, not so much. But as my man Chan asked, what's it going to take for us to win? Just smart basketball. I mean, I know you probably want more than that, but taking care of the ball, taking good shots, getting the ball to Mathis, which Mississippi State has a center that's 7'2" and Quincy Ballard. So it's going to be difficult for Mathis to get those easy looks. I will say Dalen Swain, he needs to be able to go off in this game. You got to give him the keys more. I think sometimes Daylon Swain could be a little passive, and then you got guys, and this is what I mean by making the right decision, Sean Miller. You got guys like Tremon Mark and Jordan Pope taking majority of the shots. There's going to be times where that's the case, but overall, I need Mathis taking majority of the shots. I need Daylon Swain, number two. That's what I need. Those are your two best players. They give you the best shot offensively to get easy looks due to their ability. And then the rest of your guys have to play off them. That's Jordan Pope. That's Tremon Mark. That's Kendall Weaver. That's Simeon Wilcher and everyone else in between that. So if we could get Swain and Mathis going, I like Texas' chances tomorrow. But if they can't stop Hubbard, it could be a long night at the Moody Center. Texas women got a decent win yesterday against Missouri. Started off a little slow, down 12, which is very uncharacteristic for Vic Schaefer's team. They were down 12 in the first half. Coach sat Maury Harmon down, put in Brianna Preston. And one thing I love about Vic Schaefer, he could care less if you're one of his top players. Whether you're Madison Booker, whether you're Rory Harmon, if you're not playing well, he's going to put you right next to him for a little bit.
And he's gonna let's talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about it because you got to earn your playing time. Rory Harmon, one of the more decorated players in Texas women's basketball history. Like, I think she's one of the only players to have like over 10,000 points and 700 assists. Like, that's ridiculous. But even she at times needs a little check-in. She got checked. She came back in the game, Sean. She had 8 steals to end the game, a career high. Texas forced 30 turnovers. Mm. 30 turnovers.
That's a lot.
Against Missouri. Yeah, that's a ton. Like, they did that earlier this year against Baylor. Like, 30 turnovers, there's no way you're winning if you play a team and you have 30 turnovers on them. There's no way of winning. So they dealt with that. Madison Booker and Jordan Lee were terrific. Missouri, they were playing this very compact zone where they were just sagging everybody in the paint. It was weird. It was like a 1-2-2 zone. They weren't even going out on Rory Harmon. The only players that they would go out on was Jordan Lee and Madison Booker. And I felt like it caught Texas by surprise in that first quarter. Coaching staff did a good job of figuring out how to break the zone in the second half. And then they started getting easier looks. Add that with the turnovers they force, they end up blowing open the game and got a good dub on the road. So even though it started off a little scattered and just a little uneasy, Vic Schaefer got his girls right and they end up getting a double-digit win. Now they got Ole Miss on Sunday, which will be a ranked matchup, one of their tougher opponents of the season. So we'll see how that goes. Texas basketball, conference play underway. Tomorrow, Mississippi State. Sunday against Ole Miss, Texas women get their first home conference debut. But hell of a show, Sean. Appreciate you, my guy. Sean,
yeah, thanks for having me.
Horns Takes podcast. Check them out there. Let's bring in the guys from Open Gym, Patrick and the Ole Miss Rebel himself.
Ole Miss, proud
the Ole Miss hat. Matt in the building.
Yeah, don't forget,
looking good, dog. I see the glow.
Yeah, don't forget the Eli Manning jersey back here.
Manning.
Look, I still don't believe it, honestly. There are so many different things that happened at the end of that game where I was like, okay, they have 1 second left. They're going to get an 80-yard, you know, Saints. You remember when the Saints did that, like, lateral thing and scored the touchdown or whatever? Like, I just knew that was going to happen given my history with Ole Miss, and I just knew heartbreak was coming, but it didn't happen. I'm still shocked.
I am too.
Oh, that's the good stuff, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Charlie Weiss Jr. Beat Golden. Trinidad Chambliss still rolling. But can't wait to listen, fellas. Happy New Year, y'all. Sean, appreciate
Happy New Year.
Y'all be cool.
Appreciate you guys.